Tom Temin and Emily Kopp, federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. The IRS may encourage more people to blow the whistle on tax cheats under new rules that went into effect this week. A good tipster could receive up to 30% of the taxes and penalties the agency collects. Dean Zerbe is now a partner at the law firm of ZFF&J, and he represents whistleblowers. But as a Senate staffer in 2006, he wrote the whistleblower law for Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley. Now, Zerbe tells us how he thinks the new guidance will impact whistleblowers.
I think there's a couple of good things in it. The good things in it are that you can get an award if you are dealing with net operating losses. A lot of companies are in losses, and if you reduce those losses, they'll look at giving you an award down the road when the company's actually paying taxes. That's a good thing. But I think there's really kind of more of a missed opportunity. One of the biggest problems we've got is lack of communication between the whistleblower and the IRS, and they really didn't do much to improve that. And probably the biggest thing that they missed was that they didn't expand it to cover criminal fines and penalties, and that was very disappointing. So overall, it's kind of a mixed bag, some good things, some bad things, and we'll see how we go.
And walk us through that communication that you mentioned. Starting with when a whistleblower first tries to approach the IRS and then following through on what the agency does.
Right. Great question. So the way it would work is typically you'll file what we call Form 211, and that's you're saying, hey, here's the information I've gotten, here's what's going on. Ideally, then, the IRS brings you in and says, okay, tell us all about it and tell us what's going on. They're not required to do that, but it's kind of a best practice. And I think it's vital because the whistleblower knows so much, and it's hard to convey it all in just kind of a simple submission. But then the difficulty is so often then it goes radio silent, and you don't hear from the IRS, and these cases can take years. Just if you think of the natural process of audit and appeal and all that, it could be years. So very frustrating for the whistleblower. And I'd say, too, it concerns me that I don't think the IRS is taking full advantage of the whistleblower. I think just one or two interviews isn't enough to get all the information that they may need, particularly in a case that they're actually working. So then you've got that period. Hopefully, if everything goes well, then the IRS comes back and says, thank you very much for your information. We got money from it. And let's start talking about what you think your award should be. And then the nice thing with the law, probably the most important thing, is it's a requirement for them to give you an award. It's not just a gift of theirs. They have to give you an award. And if you're not satisfied with it, you can go to tax court. And so you've got protections for your rights. So it's good that way.
And if you go to tax court, you're suing the IRS then?
You're effectively suing the IRS, right? You're in a sense asking the court to direct the IRS to give you the award. So, right, it's your chance to finally sue the IRS. For people who don't wake up thinking happy thoughts about the IRS, here's your chance.
And what is the IRS doing during that silent period between when they may initially interview a potential whistleblower and when they come back saying we've gotten some sort of solution?
Sure. Good point. So it just does take a long time for an exam to happen. As a tax attorney, I can tell you, that they're often going back a number of years. And so the IRS is certainly overwhelmed with a lot of work that they have to do. But they're looking through it. They're asking for information from the taxpayer. They're interviewing people. They're building up their case on this issue. And then that could take a couple, 3 years. But then the whistleblower basically has 3 years or 2 years to appeal and say, well, I think that's wrong. And so you've got to let the statute go. So that's where you've got kind of a lot of built-in time and delay right there in terms of the whistleblower seeing it. So it takes a lot of patience. It is part of the law to be a tax whistleblower. It's because of the frustration of communication and because of just the time involved on it. So that's what we really were hoping the IRS would be better is changing their regs to better communicate with the whistleblower. They say they're going to try other ways of doing that and better communicating. We'll see. I must admit the program's been around now for a number of years, and it's probably the point of frustration for folks. Hopefully they'll do better, but it's kind of more proof in the pudding right now.
And who are the whistleblowers typically, and what are they risking by coming forward and then basically being in limbo for several years?
Very good question. So contractors, I know a lot of contractors are listening. Certainly people who work for contractors are common. I would say, even though the regs have said, no, you can't be a federal government employee, I think those regs are wrong and we're going to challenge them. Certainly, obviously, if you're an IRS person, you're not going to be able to do something. But if you're an employee at transportation or something like that, I think you can make a good claim of saying, wait a minute, I think these fellows are doing something wrong. But I would say the common tax whistleblower is usually someone who's very familiar with the tax activities going on at a company. You'll say they're in the accounting, or they're in the familiar with the financials, just because so often it's so detailed and so technical what's going on that, you know, a fellow that's just kind of passing by won't immediately pick it up. Say, like, unlike a False Claims Act, where maybe you'd immediately say, geez, I don't think that's right. Tax is kind of so cloaked and so nuanced that we find, particularly after Brad Birkenfeld got a big award for blowing the whistle on UBS, that who we're seeing coming in, and the ones the whistleblowers, the IRS wants to see, are these people who really have it going on, really know what's happening, have maybe got good documents, and it's involving big dollars. That's the kind of whistleblowers that the IRS wakes up wanting to talk to more.
Remind me how much Birkenfeld received?
Right, Birkenfeld got $104 million. He was the UBS whistleblower, and really just overnight changed Swiss banking, basically opened all the doors and all the windows to Swiss banking, and the government's gotten billions out of it. But that's the great example, quite frankly, Emily, of the power of just one whistleblower. One whistleblower basically brought in billions of dollars for the government, changed the entire world of Swiss banking, private Swiss banking. And so, yeah, he got a very, very good award out of it. He got to pay tax on it, but it was a good award, you bet.
We're speaking with Dean Zerbe. He's a partner at the law firm ZFF&J. And he formerly worked for the Senate and actually helped write the original IRS whistleblower law. What were your expectations of this guidance, and where did it fall short of those?
Right. I think the criminal particularly, it fell short that we didn't see them giving an award for criminal. Because the idea is pretty simple, Emily. We want the whistleblower to come in, and if the government uses the information and recovers monies, then they should get an award. And quite frankly, a person can come in and, you know, the government has all sorts of different paths, and particularly all your smart government listeners know that, well, we could do A, we could do B, we could do C. They might do criminal, they might do this. In some sense, the law was clear to say, look, we don't care what you do, government, with the information, but if you're getting a benefit out of it, then the whistleblower should be rewarded for that. The IRS, unfortunately, took a very, very narrow interpretation. I expected to be challenged in the courts that said, no, only if it's regarding tax does that make sense. You might say, well, it's a tax whistleblower, but the reality is I can have a whistleblower come in with information that's so powerful that they're saying, well, hey, forget about this. We're going to send this guy to jail. Well, you don't want to discourage a whistleblower from coming in with more information and better information. And so I think that was disappointing. I think another thing is the whole idea of this was really to not just have the whistleblower come in, but similar to the False Claims Act, which a lot of your listeners probably are familiar with, and a lot of these are hand in glove with False Claims Act cases, I would say, by the way, is that the whistleblower and their attorneys should be working hand in glove with the IRS. I mean, the idea is to make it be a force multiplier to really assist that government agency. You know, the IRS is very beleaguered. They've got a lot of duties. They've had staff cutting. It really is a tough thing. Is the idea was when we wrote it was, hey, we want these people in there helping pull the oars, helping to assist the government. And as we all know, no one like someone who's been on the inside to kind of act as a Sherpa to guide you through everything. That's the perfect thing you want, is, and they can save so much time and make you more efficient and really get the bad guys quickly. So that's where I think it's just a cultural issue. I think it takes a long time. When the False Claims Act came in place, it took a long time for DOJ to get their mind around it. I think they're getting better. There's certainly a lot of good people at the IRS who embrace this law, but it's taking a while, and I think the opportunities that are there just haven't been fully realized by the new guidance. You had asked a good question earlier about being at risk. The nice thing about the law and the IRS has been very good at protecting whistleblowers' identity. You're very private. It's not like the False Claims Act where it's a court case. You're very private. So whistleblowers are extremely protected, and the IRS has been very good at that and very good at protecting the identity of it. So I think that's an important thing for folks to understand. And
my other question was, bottom line for the IRS, is this new guidance right, going to let it collect more money?
I think it will. It's kind of a yes and no, and I apologize for that. Yes, I think the change regarding the net operating losses is a big deal, because take a big bank. They'll often maybe have $1 billion in losses, and so they're not paying tax right away. Well, previously, they really weren't encouraging people to come forward, even though the IRS is hugely interested in reducing businesses' NOLs. It's just as important. I think that in the long run will be important, that you're not going to discourage whistleblowers from coming forward and saying, well, they're in a loss posture, they're not paying taxes now, why should I bother? And the lawyer's talking, why should you bother? I think that's an important thing for down the road, and they had a common sense solution on that. So I think that's good. I think the bad side, though, is for it's going to be very discouraging for bad actors. You know, whistleblower says, geez, I gave him information. I put this guy in jail. He had to pay a $20 million, you know, criminal fine. And you're kidding me. You mean I'm just outside looking in? I think that, unfortunately, for the very bad actors, it's not good news in terms of encouraging folks to come forward. You know, we're going to be probably litigating this issue, and I'm thinking that the courts will look favorably to us, but we'll have to see. So I think some good news, some bad news, and really more than anything, a missed opportunity really on the communication side, that more could have been done to open up that discussion, make whistleblowers understand what's better and better utilize them. And so that's something I think is a cultural issue, and hopefully we'll get better on it as we go forward. But you know, there's a lot of positives out there. I mean, I certainly encourage for your listeners, if they're aware of something and it's, you know, real money and they've got good documents and information, the IRS is wanting to hear from you. And I think, you know, the program overall has been good. The whistleblower office at the IRS has been a good champion of the program. It's just, you know, unfortunately, it's not a walk in the park to get there.
So do you or will you recommend to your own clients, many of whom are thinking about blowing the whistle, that they go to the IRS?
Yes, I certainly would. I think it's probably more me as a lawyer kind of looking with a hard eye at their case and saying, here's where I think it's strong or weak, and also preparing them that, you know, they need to be patient. Whatever they think it's going to take, double it. And so I certainly, you know, would be encouraging folks to come forward, but they need to, you know, be realistic, have their eyes open, realize it's going to be patient, don't give up that day job, but also to be recognizing that I think for their careers and what have you, that they're okay in terms of that. I would say, I mean, in some senses for whistleblowers is making certain that they're taking steps now to protect themselves from retribution and that they're not making themselves known to the company is kind of an important piece of that as well, too. So, I would certainly encourage folks to come forward. It's just that they need to be aware that it's not going to all kind of be flowers in their hair in terms of how it works.
Dean Zerbe is a partner at the law firm of ZFF&J. He helped write the original IRS whistleblower law. We'll post this interview along with a link to the guidance at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. It's 6:33. Still to come on Federal News Radio, Army readiness in the future could be impacted by limited energy resources. We'll get more from Catherine Hammack. She's the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations, Energy, and Environment. But first, the Army's future in robotics rests on open source and open architecture. Our DoD reporter Jared Serbu has details. It's the Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Emily Kopp on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.